I'd like now to welcome fiction writer Ramona Ossibel. She is the author of the new book of short stories, A Guide to Being Born. And tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, she will be speaking at Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this is a book with multiple short stories, but they're divided into sections called birth, gestation, conception, and love. And there's so much physical, kind of visceral sensation in this book. I mean, it's about being in a body, so to speak. Did you conceive of the stories as going together in some way? I mean, as a whole, or are they kind of compilations of different things you've done at different times? How did that go?
I did not conceive of them as a body at first. I just was sort of writing one story to the next. And when I had a pile of stories after a couple of years, I looked back at them and it became very clear that I had certain things on my mind. I kept coming back to this idea of sort of pregnancy and parenthood and the weight and great joys of both of those things. Not being a parent myself yet, I was sort of just looking at that possibility before me, and apparently it was on my mind. So after I sort of realized that, and I wanted to press the issue, I kind of wanted to put the collection together around that kind of center of gravity and allow for the idea that we are born over and over in our lives, that there's, you know, the moment that we are actually born into the world, but then we transform so much as we grow up and when we ourselves become parents and then when our own parents get old and then when we ourselves are looking at the end of our lives, that there's all these huge transformations that I sort of wanted to think of as births.
So you have, since you wrote these stories, become a mother. Does it make you see the stories in different ways?
In some ways it does. I think in a way it would have been harder for me to write the stories after I'd had a child, just because I'm so close to it now, and it's harder to see things, I think, when you're right up against them. And I could sort of imagine my way in, and I was free to, you know, it was true fiction. I could really imagine situations that were so different from my life. And I think once you're kind of, it's your own true life, you're more, you have allegiances and you want to get it right and you want to be more careful to sort of, everybody involved feels more real to you. So it's a different, the stakes are different. But I think none of them strike me as untrue. Now, having had a child, I think, for example, there's a story in the book called Atria in which a teenager gets pregnant and she can't imagine that she's going to give birth to a human. The pregnancy comes of a not a situation involving love, and she feels like this creature inside of her, how could it be born and be a person? It seems to her that it's going to be, first she sort of imagines it as a ball of light, and then later it's sort of this eagle, and then later it's a three-headed giraffe. And I think then when I was pregnant, I was thinking back at that story and feeling like, oh, that feels very possible. I mean, who knows? I didn't expect that I was going to have a three-headed giraffe. I was pretty sure I was going to have a human baby, but everything else about it was completely unknown. The vastness of what you are entering into is quite profound, and I think that it's natural. I'm sure we all have really huge questions in that moment.
Very much so, and one of the stories that really affected me was the story about parents of a child who was developmentally impaired, and the child was never going to have more than the mind of a baby, but it was getting to have the body of an adolescent and later an adult. And what do you do about that? And that story is, first of all, it's really creepy. And it's also like, it acts on both a completely real level. These are perhaps decisions about what to do about that real parents are making, but it's also on this metaphorical level. Can you keep somebody from growing up?
Right, exactly, yeah. And I think it's just such a huge weight to have to bear, and decisions, very real, specific human decisions that you have to make in a situation that feels so impossibly big and inhuman in a way. That is, how could you ever know what to do? And I think we all face things like that at moments in our lives that feel outsized and that we are really incapable of sort of measuring up to, yet we have to face them, and we have to proceed with regular, you know, you have to make a phone call and call the doctor and make a decision about what to do in that day, on that regular day on Earth.
And these are such historical moments because, I mean, in another era, that same child would have been drowned in the river when it was 6 months old.
Of course. Yes, exactly. Yeah, there are things that we can do now that our brains have made possible, and yet I think our brains are also incapable of really grasping at the same time.
Exactly. We're talking to author Ramona Aucibel. As I was reading through your stories, I kept thinking about surrealist painting, and there was this sense of a kind of visual surrealism. Is that something that you think about when you're writing or that you see after you've written some of your stories?
Definitely, yes. I think I'm really interested in how an exaggeration can let us see a very regular problem or question. So none of the fantastical elements in the book are really outside of the world. I think of them just as magnifications of things that we are thinking about all the time. So I think that situation we were just talking about with the parents of the developmentally disabled daughter, that is as unbelievable to me a situation as a story like, there's a story called Chest of Drawers where an expectant father is sort of feeling left out of the physical process of pregnancy, and then he develops these drawers in his chest, actual physical drawers. So I was sort of using that magnification of the feeling he had of kind of emptiness and helplessness, and I gave it a space to exist in the physical world and so that we could sort of get a real look at it, which I think is, I find satisfying just as a writer and also as a reader. I love to read stories that do that, and that there's so much around us all the time. Our lives are so full of amazing and strange and hard and sad things, but oftentimes I think they're hard to sort of see clearly, and I think using those surrealist kind of motions let us kind of look at them and examine them in ways that we couldn't otherwise.
This is a book of short stories. You've also written a novel. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, first of all, did you do one first? Did you write the novel first or the short story? And how those two forms are the same and how they're different?
Sure, yeah. I actually wrote them basically at the same time. I wrote the first versions of the stories first, but I continued to come back to them throughout the whole process of writing the novel. And I think partly I was, you know, sort of getting going as a writer, and I thought, oh, people write novels. I want to write a novel. Let's try that. And I had this idea that I'd been kicking around for years about family, these family stories that my grandmother had been telling me about her parents in Eastern Europe and these really amazing and impossibly sad situations. And I really felt like they needed more space than a short story could give them. So I set to work writing the novel, and it was much scarier for me to do that for such a long time than to get to the first draft of a story. I find that the first draft is the hardest part because you just don't know until you've got it all down. There are people who can plan and who have faith that they will be able to follow their plan, but I don't really work that way. I kind of have to discover the magic as I go. So the process of writing the first draft of a novel is a little bit terrifying, where the process of writing a first draft of a story is, you know, a few days, and if it doesn't work, it's fine. You move on and do something else. But beyond that, I think that I love both forms. I think that the space you get with a novel is really wonderful. And I had a teacher, Christine Scott, who used to describe a short story as a closet and a novel as the whole house. So you get kind of like, once you've got that frame up, you've got your walls, you have all this room to move around, and you get to look at the same questions and the same situations from different points of view or across time in ways that are really exciting and interesting. So I love that about that form. But then I also love about short stories that it's so compact, and you're just in it, and you have this kind of leap of faith that I think you can't take in a novel the same way. That I can, you know, sort of a conceit like a man developing drawers in his chest is possible in a short story and much, much harder in a novel, because to keep your reader believing you for 350 pages is much different than for 15 pages. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in that way it can be more like a painting. I mean, it's not that there isn't narrative and there has to be a beginning, middle, and end, but in a way it can be more like just a moment, a pretty short moment in time.
Exactly, yeah. And you get to kind of zoom in on that moment and really examine it and get to know it. And I think that's, I love that. I love writing that way.
You said something before about how when you're working too closely from real life, you get all caught up in getting it right, and that can actually be a hindrance to the process of writing fiction. I think there's another kind of getting it right, which is getting the fictional reality right, and those two things are strangely quite different.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think the fictional reality, once you have some understanding of it as the writer, you have just as much work to do to fill it out and make it feel true and make and follow the rules that you yourself have set for it. So there's a story in the collection called Tributaries where people, it's a world in which when you fall in love, you grow a new arm. So that was the rule that I set out at the beginning of the story. And so then within that rule, my job is to kind of figure out all the ways, all the different mutations of that, how it would manifest itself if a person had always been in love with the same person her whole life, how would it manifest if somebody had sort of fallen in and out of love with various sort of characters that came. There's a character in the story who she is covered in hands. She has no full-grown love arms, but she's got all these hands, and they appeared sometimes with real people in her life and sometimes when she was reading about Abraham Lincoln. So I was thinking about the way that love works in the real world and the many trillions and billions of different versions of it and trying to give some of those some physical attributes. So that was a place where I was really working exactly what you're saying, trying to get it right in the fictional world using the parameters that I had set out for myself.
Ramona Ossibel's new collection of short stories is called A Guide to Being Born, and she will be at Collected Works Bookstore tomorrow, Tuesday, at 6 o'clock in the evening. Now, you live in California, but you are from Santa Fe. You're from New Mexico.
Indeed, yeah. I grew up in Santa Fe. I lived there until I went off to college.
Well, it'll be great to have you back home, and congratulations on this terrific collection of stories.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. I can't wait to come back.
Excellent. We'll see you there.
Okay, thank you.